you might have just explained some people are listening to you right now, Robin, and they're thinking, well, that's what Thanksgiving meal looks like at our house, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be in a hospital room to see all those responses come out when things get stressful in a room. Welcome to the Kindness Podcast. I'm Nicole Phillips. I wanted to kick off season 7 by setting the stage. We are going to laugh, hopefully, a lot this season and in this episode, but I also wanted to acknowledge that this show is about bringing hope and humanity to the world, and we can only do that if we're willing to acknowledge that there are things in the world that grieve us deeply. So if you noticed a gap in seasons, that is because I've spent the past 2 years getting my Master's of Divinity at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. That is where I met our next guest. Robin Hare was also a seminary student, but instead of graduating and deciding that it was more fun hosting a podcast, she actually decided to do something with her degree. So she became a level 1 trauma chaplain. Would you please help me in welcoming the one, the only, my friend, Robin Hare. Hi, Robin.
Hello.
So how I just want to... Well, I'm good. I wanted to tell everybody, though, that you gave me an option when it came to your headshot that we can use for whatever.
You're opening Robin, with this.
Robin, yeah, I'm opening with this. Robin sent me this beautiful headshot of her. And then she also sent me a picture of a very provocative looking stuffed turkey and said, or you could use this one if you want. So for anyone who wants to go in the show notes, I'm going to see if I am capable of actually getting that picture
Good grief.
Into the show notes. Because can I share it? Because people need to see it, right?
Yes, yes. Welcome, everyone.
Welcome to your brain is really the truth of it, right? Yes. So I know Robin and I think I should give full disclosure to everyone that Robin and I are very good friends. And so therefore, we talk pretty much on the daily.
Yes, we do.
And what Robin always wants to know on the daily is, what have you eaten today?
Because I'm always hungry.
And you're a foodie. You are a foodie and I am not. We are alike in so many ways and in that way, not at all. So my question to you is, what delicious thing have you eaten today?
Ooh, I had a really nice piece of grainy toast with avocado. And then I had a fried egg and I put a little bit of sriracha sauce. Mmm. And you know what I love? You know what I ate for breakfast because...
Aussie Bites from Costco.
Yes, 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 yes. Two of those bad boys too, down the hatch.
You know what she used to call those? She called those cookies. Oh, I had 2 cookies with my coffee today. And I was like, really? I love cookies. I have cookies with my coffee. What kind of cookies did you have? Chocolate chip, like macadamia nut? She's like, Aussie Bites. I was like, those are not cookies, sister.
You do not like those. I love them. I love them.
Okay, hopefully the Aussie Bite people are not listening to us right now because that wasn't very kind that I just made throw up faces when it came to the Aussie Bites. Okay, so, all right, well, this season of the Kindness Podcast, I am answering a big question, right? What does kindness look like? And then fill in the blank. So you and I have spent a lot of time talking about what does kindness look like? What does life look like? What does hope look like when there seems to be no hope? There seems to be no goodness in the room. And so that is why, Robin, I wanted to have you on and just to share some of the bits of wisdom that you have shared with me as a level 1 trauma chaplain. So would you, first of all, tell people what it takes to actually become a level 1 trauma chaplain, because this is no small feat.
I think at first you have to have a screw loose. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
It's a lot of work. It is a lot of work. You first need to have your bachelor's degree, and then you have to have some type of a theological degree. And then you have to do an internship at a hospital that's not paid. That's usually like 3 to 5 months. And then after that, you have to do a residency. And that is a lot like, I don't know, it's like a typical residency. You're working, you're doing the work, you're still continuing your education, you're getting paid like $1.50 an hour, and then after that you can get hired as a chaplain.
I had the honor of walking with Robin through this full-time residency, which when I say full-time, it was like full-time on steroids, because this is not like a 40 or 50 hour a week gig. This is like all hours of the day and night, on call, all the things, and you're just basically thrown into this.
Yeah.
And you figure it out as you go.
It takes its pound of flesh, and I think I didn't realize how busy and how emotionally taxing it was until I was out of it. And I think that's like, that's a lot of life, right? When you're walking through trauma or really serious illness or really hard times, you don't know how rough it was until you're finished.
Right, right. And so the in general, a chaplain doesn't maintain that schedule forever. That is the educational component. And then after that, you choose how much you want to work. Like it might be a regular full-time job or just being on call or kind of a combo like you do.
Yeah. Yep. And I knew that this was not going to be a sustainable thing for me personally if I did it full-time. And so I knew I had to do it for 1 year. And then after that, there was a firm line in the sand that I would only work half-time, or, you know, I'm okay with working a little bit more, but I wanted to work part-time.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important point to mm-hmm. point out, because you are in the middle of crisis every time you step into the door.
All the time.
Is a day-to-day of a chaplain? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think that there is a little bit of, I think there's a little bit of misconception when people hear I'm a chaplain. They say things like, oh, I'm not religious, I don't need you, or whatever. I think sometimes I do am asked to pray, or, you know, there is a religious reason why I'm in the room. I would say 90% of the time, this is how I describe the chaplaincy work. It's we specialize in walking with people as they walk through traumatic situations. And so you would find us at a level one trauma center, and the one that I work at, you would find us in the stabilization room. So anytime an ambulance or a helicopter comes in, we're in the rooms just kind of assessing what's going on. And then we go out and meet with family. We never give the medical like update, but we do meet with family and just kind of get them sorted out and ready to meet with the medical team. Sometimes, most often, we are with the medical team as they're kind of delivering news that might be not great. You'll also find us in the palliative care team. And so it's having really hard goals of care kind of conversations and end-of-life conversations. You'll find us on the intensive care units, just really embedded in that team, and meeting with patients. And you'll also find us on the mental health unit, which is a delight. I love being on that unit as well.
Mm-hmm. I loved that. During my schooling, part of my schooling was to spend about 6 months, I don't know, it was a semester, I guess, in a hospital. Mine was not level one, thank goodness. but we did have, you know, an ER, an intensive care unit, a behavioral health unit. And I loved the behavioral health unit because there's no punches pulled there, right? Meaning these people say it the way they see it, and I dig it. And sometimes what they see and what they say is not reality. It's there's some psychoses of some sort going on. But even in the middle of that, like, you have to show up as your most authentic self. Like, you can't pretend in that moment to care. Like, you either care or get out of the room.
Yeah, yep. There's no, it's kind of like being with a little kid, right?
Yeah.
They can tell when you're faking it. Or with a dog or with a horse or whatever, like people and animals, they can tell when you're faking it when they're in their like most extreme elements.
So my favorite, Robin, was when I would walk into just a hospital room, not even on the behavioral health unit, but a hospital room, and I would introduce myself and somebody would immediately come back with an F-bomb at me, like, boom, woo, well, nice to meet you too. So...
Yes, welcome, chaplain.
Yeah, so that's happened to you before.
Maybe once, yeah.
Once a day. Tell
Yeah.
me about opening that door and what the first few seconds look like.
Yeah, I think it depends on what I'm walking into. Let me give you an example of more of like in the emergency department, something dreadful has happened. And I've always told you this, Nicole, that I have a little low-level dread for right before I'm going on call, because I think all these poor people that don't even know they're about to meet me.
Yes.
It feels like I already am feeling compassion and empathy, because I know that once they meet me, life is not going to be the same. It's going to be bumped off course. And I don't know who I'm going to meet, and they don't know who they're going to meet. And it's just low-level dread.
Right. Because they woke up in the morning probably thinking that today was just going to be a day. And instead, today is a day that they're going to meet Robin Hare. And I always say, I'm sorry that they have to meet you. And I'm grateful that you're the one they get to meet.
Yeah, that's so kind of you. That always does help when you say that, because this is something that is a recurring feeling right before I'm going on call. But yeah, I will walk up into the room. I'm very careful about the way I introduce myself. Generally, if somebody shows up in the emergency room and a chaplain is there, that's not. So I'm pretty careful
Like,
about
who
that.
died?
I know. I think, there's the extreme stress responses, and there's three that we all know, like fight, flight, flee. Am I saying those right? Fight, flight, flee. No, fight,
No,
flight,
freeze.
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 Don't worry, I've got it all under control,
It's
folks.
there. When she needs it, it comes out.
The other two that we don't know as much is flop or fawn. And so flop looks a lot like just you have completely been overwhelmed and you cannot like engage meaningfully. Like sometimes people actually even faint, but sometimes it looks like they're totally zoned out and they are just not with you.
Is this the patient or is this the family?
The family. It's usually when
Okay.
I'm meeting family, because if I'm working in the emergency room, I'm always meeting family. So it's either, fight, flight, freeze, flop. And then the last one is fawning. And fawning is a weird one that, I mean, I know I do it. It's like I am under so much duress that I'll like give up all power to the person that's in the room. I'll be like, oh, doctor, you know exactly what you're doing. I'm out. Like you're so educated. You do you. Fix this, whatever you need to do. And then making sure all of the people in the room are okay. And putting my needs at the very end. So that's another typical response I see.
So the you're saying like the mother who has a son in the emergency room from a car accident or something, the mother will come in and instead of having a snack or having a glass of water or something, even though she's thirsty or even though she has to go to the bathroom, she won't think about that. She will figure out what everybody else in the room needs and then make sure the doctor knows that. That whatever the
He's in
doctor says
charge.
is okay, even if the doctor are the doctors wrong. I mean, why wouldn't the doctor be in charge?
And I think that, I mean, and sometimes we just, the medical team just needs input. Like,
Oh.
can you tell me some more about like whatever?
Yes.
And when people are in that extreme response, it's just like complete fawning. And so I usually meet people in there in one or many of these stages, and I can walk into a room of 20 people and I've got one guy punching the wall and screaming and shouting and swearing. And I've got a mom that's right next to this kid that's doing that. And she is just almost like catatonic, like just rocking herself in that holy flop way, like, oh,
Yeah.
you know? And so there might be people that are like, I just got to get out. I'm going to go out and smoke, like whatever it is. So multiple different ways of dealing in one setting.
I feel like you might have just explained some people are listening to you right now, Robin, and they're thinking, well, that's what Thanksgiving meal looks like at our house, right? Like, I mean, mean, it doesn't have to be in a hospital room to see all those responses come out when things get stressful in a room.
Well, and that is, it is like a stress response, right? When we are stressed out, and sometimes it's our family, right?
Yes.
That's very funny, Nicole.
Yeah.
I wonder what you're thinking about these days.
Well, I'm just saying, some people who are here with us today are thinking, you know, they've got family coming in for the holidays or whatever. And, you know, and so, okay. Anyway, so back to tie that into what I'm actually asking is, so when you see those responses, how do you meet each person in that response? Do you meet each person in the response? Do you ignore some people and lean into others? What do you do? And because I feel like there's probably a translation, because just when you explain those personality types, or at least those reactions in that moment, I am sure everyone else like me is like, oh, I know somebody who gets angry when things go down. Oh, I know somebody who just flops when things go down. So how do we use that? How do you use that in the moment? And then how do we use that?
I think the kindest, you know, like I think a lot about what kindness looks like in the emergency room.
Yeah.
Or especially like, what does kindness look like when somebody is like freaking out and screaming at me and punching a wall and like, or running away? I've had that. There was a terrible car accident and the dad just literally ran away from the hospital. Like, he just could not cope. And so what does kindness look like that in those moments? And to be honest, I think it's just letting their bodies do what they're, it's instinctual, like what they are needing to do. And if this is how their instincts are leading them to be really angry, oh, let it be. Let it be. And I do a really good job of making sure that security knows, hey, I'm on this. We're going to let this be. There is nothing to be afraid of. Be in the background. Come if I give you the signal, but just let it be. And letting this dad run away, because if I would have tried to contain him and give him a hug and, you know, comfort him, his body was telling him to do something very different. And so the kindest thing I could do for that dad was to let him run, to let the security know, let him run, to let the family know he's not running away from you. He is not running away from you. It is the only way that he can cope right now. Because I wanted the family to remember this one day when they look back and they're like, wait a minute, Dad ran away from us. No, he didn't. He was just, like, his whole body was just shutting down, and that was the best way that he could cope.
Animals do that too, don't they? Don't animals have some sort
sometimes they have to
shake,
like,
response?
Yeah, they do. Like, they, it's more of like when they are, they're running so fast, they realize they can't get away, right? And then they'll do the flop. They'll completely flop.
Oh.
And then if the danger passes, then they get up and they really need to shake their bodies out, like shake the trauma off, and then they go on with their life.
Mm. So then how do you think that we, as people who are trying to love other people well, should respond to others, the floppers, the runners, the big emotions, the crying, the anger? Like, how do we show up in the middle of that?
I would say, like, so outside of the hospital, I'm just going to talk personal experience. I was quite sick for a while, and we had just moved to a new neighborhood. We'd been living in Belgium for 16 years and had just moved, and I got very, very sick. We had just started to get to know our neighbors, like, there was multiple times where I was hospitalized, but there was one day that was just, it like stands out in my memory. My husband was with our youngest son at church, and our two oldest boys were at home with me. And I had a spidey sense that morning that things were not going to be good. And I just didn't listen to that spidey sense. But I went to the bathroom, and I ended up like just kind of collapsing on the ground in the bathroom. And I had nothing in me. I couldn't call out for help. And my middle son found me on the ground. And he went like kind of berserk and went and called the neighbors and got everyone there. And I remember my neighbor did the most kind thing ever. She came and she just sat on the ground with me next to me while we were waiting for the ambulance. And she just rubbed my back and she said, "Life is just horrible sometimes. This is just terrible." And all I could think of was like, she was not trying to cheer me up. She could not fix the fact that I was so, so, so sick. She could not fix the fact that my husband was looking for a job and the kids were struggling with, you know, a terrible homesickness. She couldn't fix anything. All she could do was come alongside, sit with me in the dirt and say, "Life is terrible sometimes." And I think that's like the key when we can't fix something, because we're very rarely can we fix things, right? Like completely fix things. But just knowing that I was being seen really, really clearly in that moment, and my situation was being very understood.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes for me, at least, I have in the past wanted to bring someone hope in the middle of a moment.
Yeah.
And I rush it. I rush their time of despair, because it's important to be able to sit in that despair for a little bit.
And I was in no place to find hope. I was in such terrible pain. I had just completely traumatized my middle son. And I felt like shame, and it was not true shame, but I was feeling shame in the moment for causing so much stress and worry into my family. Do not talk to me at hope in this moment. And the hope for me was that somebody understood how hard it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember learning that just to be the calm presence.
Yeah.
Right? Without saying, "Oh, let me pray for you," or, "Oh, let me whatever." Like, no. I mean, just be. Like, the prayer is just to be.
Yeah, present. And the prayer, my favorite phrase is, sometimes the prayer is just showing up. Like, I also, like, I think of my friend Heidi. During that terrible time period, I had just moved from Brussels, and I had moved myself. Like, the boys were still in Brussels, kind of closing things down there. And, oh, my goodness, I missed them so much. And I was so overwhelmed. And life was just hard, hard, hard. And my friend Heidi called me and said, "I'm coming." And she came the next day. And she took me out for lunch. She drove, like, 3.5 hours, took me out for lunch. We sat and talked. And I think we maybe shopped a little bit, which would generally not.
No, you hate shopping. That's like torture for you.
And then she left. She drove a total of 7 hours for a 2-hour visit. Yeah. And it was, the prayer was just showing up. What a kindness.
Yeah. Yeah. What else do you want to talk about? Let's see. I wrote down questions, but I just, you know, you and I never seem to have trouble.
I know we don't.
You have chaplained me like a million times, right?
Bazillions of times, and you too for me, obviously.
And so I think it's funny because I think both of our families also, you know, can see when we shift into chaplain mode. You more than me, because I mean, I was just, you know, part-time for a little bit, but you, this is now the lens through which you look, right? Yeah. And so you show up with intentionality with your family. You did before, but I think you really do now. Do they still notice that you're chaplaining them, or are you able to sneak it in?
Yeah, I actually have. It was, so I look back on that time when we were going through a hard time coming back from Brussels, and I was looking at it about, I suppose, a year ago when I was writing my master's thesis, and I was kind of beating up on myself that I didn't do a good job of caring for my family. And my professor said, "You are not their pastor. You are not their chaplain. You were the wife and you were the mother. So, like, let yourself off the hook a little bit." And that has helped a lot. Like, I am not their chaplain. I'm not their pastor. I'm just, I'm the shrieking wife because, you know, the kitchen's messy or whatever.
Yep.
I can just be free to be mom and to be wife and trust that there is a chaplain or a pastor for them or a counselor or whatever. I don't need to be that person.
So has your definition of kindness toward them changed then since you began this whole journey?
I think my definition has changed, especially with my oldest kids. I know you are really good at this. I've gotten so much better.
Thank you. I don't even know what you're going to say.
I get much better at saying, you guys are so smart. You will figure this out. And if you fail, you'll figure it out. And I'm here. You know, that I've gotten much better at. Much yeah. better at. And not trying to fix my sweet husband's problems, because to be more like my neighbor that showed up and just said, yeah, life sucks right now. You know, it's just really hard. And to allow myself to feel that too. Whereas before I was always like the cheerleader, like, oh, well, we'll get this, you know, and it's okay. I don't need to do that. I can put my pom poms down for now and just be.
Hey, speaking of the I'm going to go back to the flopper, because what you just said about the being the mom and maybe not showing up with all the right advice. And so I'm thinking about moms and I'm thinking about the ones who love to do it all. Or it's not, it wouldn't be a flopper. It would be not a fixer. What's the one that takes care of everybody
fawning.
Else in the room?
Fawning,
yeah. fawning over everyone. That's right. So I think a lot of times women, especially, do that. We don't know yeah. what to do. And yeah. so
we do it all. Everything.
But then here is the other thing that we add into that. We refuse to let anybody step in and help.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just, yeah. it becomes this, I don't know what that is about us, but it's like, we can't, like, it's a control thing, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you and I were talking about it this morning. I had, so we had just gotten to know our neighbors, and I remember there was a day where it was very snowy out and our driveway was, you know, it needed to be shoveled. And I had at the time a very healthy 40-something husband, two teenage boys. Obviously, they could put on their stupid boots and go outside and do this.
Do it.
And I happened to look outside and my neighbor Michelle was outside. I'd only met her like maybe once, shoveling the driveway. And I said, listen, Michelle, you don't need to do this. I've got kids and a husband and we can do it. And she stopped me and she said, you do have kids and a husband that can do this. And I mean, steal some of your words, but don't steal the blessing of being a blessing. She mm-hmm. said, I get a lot out of this. Like, my ego is getting a boost because I'm helping you. And so if you take that away from me, you're actually taking away the chance to be, you know, helpful for you. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of resonated with me. And so after that, I started noticing, like, meals ended up on our doorstep. People who didn't know us, right? Meals and gift cards and things that, I mean, we had the wherewithal to cook. I mean, I didn't, but they did. And yeah. maybe people just knew what kind of cook Brett was. I don't know. it's like having you cook.
Right. That's exactly what it is. Do we want Nicole or Brett, or do we just want to starve? We just want to starve. Yeah.
Yeah. But I started accepting and knowing that this was a way that they can be a blessing to me. And I don't want to steal that from them.
Okay, so I'm going to pivot because there are two really important things that I want to make sure that we bring up in this interview. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to tell you what they are, and then we're going to discuss, and then we'll see what else we want to talk about. But number one is the 10% rule.
Oh,
and
yeah.
number two is when I don't know if people know this part of my story, but Saul and I have had a really rough year. Right. So 2025 started with him losing his job. He got into a car accident and hit a tree head on at 60 miles an hour. He's okay. The time he would have spent looking for a job, though, he was recovering. And so we just decided to move from South Dakota and try and create a new joyful experience somewhere. And so that mm-hmm. meant coming to Raleigh, North Carolina, because we have a daughter in college here. And and like 3 days before the house sold, which is the money we are living on, right? Because neither of us have real actual jobs at this point. 3 days before the house was supposed to sell in South Dakota, the buyer backed out. And so we had to, even though everything was all in boxes, we had to re-put it, relist it, and it sold. So in the middle of each of those things, I would be walking around Walmart in a zone, not knowing what I was supposed to put in the cart, and like not sure that I could breathe at different moments. And, you know, like all of a sudden it's like a wave, right? It comes and it just yeah. like whoomp, and you just feel like, what am I going to do? And so those were some of the moments that you chaplained me over the phone. And you had really practical tips for me that I now share with other people in different ways. So would you talk about some of those, like when you are under just this acute stress, this moment where you just, I need to get through the next 20 seconds, right? Yeah. Or whatever it is. What's some of your best tips for that?
So the 10% rule is always really helpful for me. Like I'll show up into a stabilization room and I know I am super stressed. I can hear myself breathing high and fast, and I'll tell myself, okay, low and slow. Because that high and fast breath, it's like increasing my anxiety, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not actually there about my anxiety. I'm there for somebody else. So I just repeat, not high and fast, low and slow. And I think of myself as like breathing slow and slow out of my belly button. And it pulls me down right in that moment. It pulls me down for a couple of, you know, deep mm-hmm. breaths. The other thing I always remember is that I can get 10% more comfortable. Nobody will ever know that I'm doing this. It's an extreme coping mechanism when I'm pretty stressed out. I'll think to myself, okay, let's take a quick inventory of your body. What's happening in your body right now? And the best kindness I can do, and sometimes I'm stubborn, I'm going to be honest, sometimes I'm stubborn and I don't want to do this, but I can tell that I'm holding stress someplace in my body. It might be like right now I know that my shoulders are really tense, and so I can just like let them go. And nobody knows I'm doing that in those extreme moments. Or I can maybe sometimes feel like my jaw is clenched, so I can just make it a little softer. And that's a really good way of just taking inventory. What's going on here? Mm-hmm. What can
You've
I do
said to me, like even shifting your weight in a chair, if you're, what can you do?
Sometimes like all like scrunched up weird with my legs crossed in a weird way. And then I just straighten out, and that's a mm-hmm. 10% thing. I do still have control. Here's the control I have, is I have the control over my body to make myself 10% more comfortable. I am not going to fix this situation, but I can make myself 10% more comfortable. That was some of the best advice I was given.
Yeah. Tell me about the drinking cold water, the looking over your shoulder, those sorts of things.
So the drinking cold water too, like just quick glass of ice water. It just brings like, I don't know what the science is, but it brings the nervous system kind of down. So mm-hmm. that's another trick. Like when I am meeting family in the stabilization room, I always bring them a glass of ice water and just say, hey, you know, I don't tell them this is going to cause you to like calm down a little bit, but it does. You can generally noticeably tell a difference. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm sure you have seen people when they're really, stressed out or almost ready to cry, really emotional. Sometimes you see people like grabbing their chest like this. And that is like also a really good physical, like it's a response, like a physical response to stress. And it's almost like giving yourself a heart hug, right?
So you just put your hand on your chest.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I see people doing this just automatically a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you know. mm-hmm. I don't know the science, the last one, the science on this, I don't know if it's reliable or not, but it works for me. you know, I look over both my shoulders, make sure that there's nobody behind me. Because sometimes that's like a old kind of in our bodies kind of response that, oh my gosh, am I being chased? What's coming? You know, back to caveman days.
And so yeah, just the saber-toothed tiger was getting us.
Yeah, reminding myself, it's okay. Like there's nothing coming at me. And just reminding myself, yeah, I do have control. It's not the kind of control that I want, but I am going to take control of what I can right now. And I think with kindness, that's the same thing. Like showing up for somebody that you are not going to fix this situation. Nothing. Can you do open heart surgery, Robin? Said nobody ever. Like nobody ever said, can you?
Hey, jump on in. Yeah.
We could use an extra pair of hands. Nobody said that to me. I will never do that. I can't ever fix a human body. But I can show up and I can make things 10% better. And when you are with your friends, like or neighbors or family that is, you know, they're really struggling, I can't fix things for them. I can't provide jobs. I can't do anything, but I can make it 10% better. And it might be just getting down on the ground and saying life sucks right now. Mm-hmm. It might be that. It might be shoveling a driveway, but then being genuine about it and saying, oh, no problem, no worries. But Michelle was so genuine with me, and she said, no, this is actually more about what I need. And she released me from any guilt. You've done that before for me, Nicole. I mean, I tend to be really messy and I'm cleanish right now. But
oh, I thought you meant when I took you bra shopping. But okay, carry on. That's another story for another podcast. Okay, carry on. I'm sorry. What about not showering?
Yeah, I don't like to. And so, period. End of story. I don't like it. And I know that a couple of times I've shown up to your hotel room and been like, ugh, like I'm kind of gross right now. And you have said, listen, if this is how our friendship is going to go, it's not what I want. Because if you have to like say you're sorry each time you see me for the way you're looking or how much you're talking, if you're talking more than I am or whatever, then that's not the way I want it to go. And so that was just a real kindness, like being genuine. If you're going to help out, give the reason why you are helping out. It's actually maybe more for me and it's nothing about you.
Right.
And that
right.
really helped me.
Yeah, because in friendship, I mean, if we have to apologize when we show up and talk more than somebody, if I show up and just verbally vomit all over you and then I feel like or you do that to me and then you apologize, then I feel like, well, I have to apologize if I do that, then we've created rules for the friendship there that don't really serve either one of us. So it's way better to be like, let's put on the sweatpants, let's say what needs to be said, show up,
let's bring our stinky selves forward.
Yes, well, you bring your stinky self, I bring no.
You shower, I don't.
Are you wearing like the your
dirty
top looks really
pants.
Nice. You're, are you wearing sweatpants?
Sweatpants. Yeah. Okay. And my house is a mess. So yeah. That's
I can see that. Can you all see that? Her house is just awful behind her. It's oh
there's it's a very good camera placement right now.
Yes, that's what we love, yeah. Right? It's all smoke and mirrors. I'm in a closet right now because it's got better acoustics than anywhere else in the house. It's all good.
Yeah.
Oh, Robin Hare, a delight always to talk with you. And
me
I
too.
Just, you know, I hope that everybody else feels what I feel right now, which is just like it's going to be okay. It's all going to be okay. I don't know how, right? I don't know how, because we just answered the question, what does kindness look like when we can't fix what's wrong? And so it's like, well, there shouldn't be hope because you just said we can't fix it. And yet somewhere in the middle of this conversation, hope emerged.
I think the hope, honestly, Nicole, when there is an unfixable situation, is seeing the humanity and the person next to me and acknowledging it. In some way, shape, or form. It's the acknowledging of hard times. It's showing up with a warm blanket. It's showing up with the shovel. It's showing up with genuine truthfulness about oneself, There is hope in humanity and the gentleness and the kindness and the goodness of humanity.
I don't think we have to say anything else.
The end. Robin,
the end. I'm saying Robin Hare, wow, mic drop moment right there. Well, thank you everyone for joining us and listening to the Kindness Podcast. I really hope this conversation with Robin Hare, world's greatest chaplain, reminded Woo-hoo. You that kindness isn't about being perfect. It's about staying curious and connected even when things get hard. If this episode made you think of somebody who could use some encouragement right now, would you share it with them? And as always, remember that what we look for is what we will see. Bye, everybody.
See you.